All right, welcome to a special edition of the Daily Dots. Zach's luggage got lost on his trip down to my native Texas, and I don't think he has his recording equipment, so I'm not sure if the regular show was going to get uploaded or if we were going to have a... sounds like we might have a different show this week, but I'm also going to do a Dots to help make up for the fact that there's one less part of a show this week. So I'll roll right into the market, so we'll enjoy some Friday fun here on what happened in the markets, and it was pretty eventful day. S&P closed up a little over 1%, so did the NASDAQ. Small caps were only up about 0.3%. The Magnificent Seven up about 1.5%. Volatility was pretty flat, which was kind of notable considering how good of a day it was. So it's more upside vol than anything. The dollar was flat, up a tiny bit. Most notably, I would say, and this we'll get into the data on why this happened later, but yields were up significantly across the curve. The two-year yield was up 10 basis points, which on the same day that I was informed by Goldman Sachs that my savings account interest rate was going down. So they're kind of front-running cuts that may or may not happen by dropping my interest rate on the same day that the two-year yield went up 10 basis points, but I'm not bitter or anything. The rest of the curve was up about 7, 8, 9 basis points. So pretty big move up in yields. Oil was up a tiny bit, and something I sent out to my clients, oil on the front month hit a big level that I found significant where last fall price had like a pretty tough time with. So I thought that might be a short-term kind of pullback area. And sure enough, that's kind of where we peaked out on the day. Oil really hasn't had a meaningful pullback in weeks and weeks, so wouldn't be crazy if it had one here. Speaking of things that it wouldn't be crazy if it had a pullback, gold up 1.5%. Another great day for precious metals and precious metals miners. The Supreme Leader, NVIDIA, up about 2.5%. So it was a good day for Mag 7 and kind of tech in general. Amazon, very strong, 2.8% move. Amazon and Meta have shown a lot of strength lately. And then, of course, Tesla, not so much. There was a report that came out from Reuters that Tesla was going to abandon their Model 2, their small vehicle. No confirmation of that, but Reuters usually gets things right. And if you think about all the competition they're facing on smaller EVs, that may well be true. So the one thing I kind of wanted to talk about today was the jobs report, because that's what moved markets. And I wanted to kind of give you guys a look under the hood of how deep I like to go on this data to try to get like a really firm grasp of what's really going on. Now it's worth noting, no matter how deep you go, this stuff gets revised. So, you know, you may spend a lot of time going into all these different metrics, and then 6 months later that you look back and like, oh, well, data was wrong anyway. But at the same time, I like to get a very holistic view of data as important as jobs data. Same with inflation data. Those two are so important that you got to look at it from every angle. So that's what I try to do. So I wanted to kind of walk through some of that today. Just so people get an idea of the way we look at data. So most people will have seen the fact that, you know, we added 303,000 jobs on the month, and that we were only expecting about 200,000. So they'll just see that and to see it as like, oh, what a red hot report. And there are a lot of times where it'll be that headline number will be huge, and then you dig into some of the other numbers and they're weak. So you'll get like mixed results, or vice versa, where maybe you only print 100,000 jobs, but then you look under the hood and a lot of the other metrics that you can look at are really strong. This was the case this month where I only found one tiny weakness out of everything I track. Everything else was strong, which is very, very notable. Like it is very uncommon to have one report be kind of this strong across the board. So that was kind of the headline number, of course. But in addition to that, you can look at something like just like the 3 month average of those jobs. And if you go back to November, that was under 200,000. And now the 3 month average is 276,000. So the 3 month average for jobs is about 80,000 off the low. To me, that's pretty significant. Like that is a reacceleration in job growth, and one that economists weren't expecting, one the Fed certainly wasn't expecting. The Fed absolutely was pointing to the labor market loosening up and weakening in Q4 whenever they pivoted. Now it is reaccelerating, and I don't think they're giving the proper respect to that they probably should be. Next up, of course, is hours worked, and that is one that has been weakening pretty substantially since the peak in 2021. That's when, you know, the economy and supply chains and the labor market were just shockingly robust and strong and tight. Before the pandemic, hours worked were right around 34.4, 34.3. They spiked up to almost to right around 35. Well, they've been in a steady downtrend since, like I said, so like about a two-year downtrend. And this month we went back to 34.4, which is kind of where we was like that was a good number before the pandemic. That's where we were stuck for most of 2023. But importantly, it kind of breaks the downtrend line going back to 2021. It's just kind of been a steady move lower in hours worked. Now all of a sudden you're up 2 months in a row and you're kind of breaking out of that trend channel that's been moving down. So again, very strong. The one kind of area that I would say is kind of weak was, again, we had a huge surge in part-time jobs, 691,000. And then if you look at full-time, it was down 6,000. Now, down 6,000 is not horrible by any means, but that's 3 months in a row of down full-time jobs and a big surge in part-time jobs. So we are still seeing some people kind of seemingly moving, part-time from full-time. Now, at the same time, hours worked went up. So, you know, the aggregate here is still fine. If we look at average hourly earnings, so think of, you know, more or less a wage proxy, we're slower than we were the last couple years where, you know, wages were growing up around 5%, but we're still notably way above the 10-year average. And we're well above the kind of, you know, 2012 to 2019, that entire post-GFC regime. We're above every year since the GFC, except for the last couple. So yes, kind of getting better, but still very high wage growth right now, and high wages in general. The household survey is something that bears have pointed to a lot. That includes me in 2023. There were months where the headline report, which is called the Establishment Survey, would be very strong. And then you go look at the household survey, and they're calculated a little bit differently. And in some ways, I would say the household survey is calculated it's a little better of a calculation, but it's also more volatile. So you got to be really careful with going too crazy with it. 3 months ago, 4 months ago, back in December, we had a just horrible print. Bears really pointed that out, and it's been negative 3 months in a row. Same thing. People that think the economy is turning over and breaking right now have been pointing to this. Well, this month it posted a 498,000 job gain. So naturally, everyone that has been pointing to it as weakness just ignored it today. But a very robust print, even from the household survey. So not just the establishment survey. Next is maybe the best single labor market metric you can look at, and it's just called aggregate payrolls. So it takes the jobs number itself, and it takes hours, and it takes wages, and it rolls all that in to one metric. So you get sort of a holistic, all-encompassing view of a jobs report. And that same thing is kind of like hours, and largely because of hours, it's been steadily in a downtrend since, you know, being on a rocket ship in 2021. It moved higher this month after having kind of a rough monthly print last month. But I would say more notably, just like some of the other data I was just talking about, you're above the kind of 2009 to 2020 levels. So like you have gone into a long downtrend and you're still at this point on this little tick up above basically a whole decade's worth of jobs data. So if nothing else, like that shows me that the jobs market is still not just strong, but very, very strong. Well, another thing you can look at is just permanent job losers. So some people lose their jobs and they go right back, or there's a temporary job loss where like, hey, it's seasonal work, like we'll have you back in 3 months type thing. And they track all this. So one thing I like to look at is that permanent job loss, because at times job losses aren't that bad, but maybe you'll get a spike in permanent job losers. And that is just like kind of a signal like, oh, hey, like maybe the economy and the labor market are deteriorating more than you may expect. This had a pretty decent jump last month, which is not, you know, not great. But this month we had the best print since September of 2023. So a big fall in permanent job losers. People that are unemployed for economic reasons, that kind of speaks for itself, fell for the second month in a row and looks to be kind of pulling back down after it kind of put in a new like 2-3 year high. Now we've gone back down 2 months in a row. So another like one of these little signals the Fed might have been starting to think, okay, like labor market's starting to loosen up here. Like let's be ready to do a bunch of cuts. And then it goes right back to, you know, a lot of strength. The dead horse I've beaten many times on the show, construction employment. Something I talked about in the last week or two was the fact that housing completions had surged all of a sudden. And that made me wonder like, okay, some houses are finishing up. Will those workers, you know, keep that job and just go to another house? Will they be able to find another job, you know, maybe in non-residential construction, on and on. So at least for this month's data, no sign of any problems because of those completions. We hit a new all-time high for construction jobs, and residential and non-residential were both very strong. So absolutely no issues there. And I really don't think you can have anything resembling a recession until those jobs have a problem. The residential construction jobs, if you just break those out on their own, were up 5,500, and that was the best print in about 6 months, something like that. So not just keeping up after the surge in completions, but kind of reaccelerating like so many other economic indicators lately. I got two more, but the last one I will spend some serious time on here is cyclical jobs. And that's just where I've gone and taken different industries that are very cyclical, because that's a good way to try and figure out, you know, hey, are we going to head into recession or not, based on things like truck drivers, construction, manufacturing, stuff like that, temporary jobs. And that has been in a downtrend, but a very like slow and steady downtrend, not one that ever really suggested like we're in trouble, we're going to have a recession, but it's been almost like leaking lower. It went up this month over month, and it's almost positive year over year, and it's been negative since March of 2023. So we have a full year of negative year over year growth in cyclical jobs, but now we ticked up on the month. And so one more month of gains and we're absolutely going to be positive on a year over year basis. So even cyclical jobs are suggesting that the economy's fine and that the labor market is very tight. And the last thing I'll leave you with is I did build a kind of a bit of a leading index for with a bunch of different data for the labor market. Every once in a while, it diverges from actual jobs, and it tends to be right and lead jobs lower. So if you go back to the 2000 recession, it kind of started to weaken before actual jobs did. And even the 2019-2020 recession, which is, I mean, kind of a fake recession, it weakened before we had a break. And really, for the last 2 years, it's been weakening, and we haven't had any sort of break. So it could be as simple as, you know, this lead is just basically doesn't work anymore. Or it could be a lot like the late 90s where this thing started to kind of run below non-farm payrolls, really from 98 all the way into 01 before you started to get actual job losses. So you're talking, you know, 3 years of this thing at least putting up a yellow flag. And to this point, it has put up more like 2 years. So if you were to follow the late 90s analog, you could be in for a whole, you know, extra year here of everything being fine, despite this being a little weak. I don't put a ton of stock into it, but I thought, you know, that jobs report was so strong and so positive that I thought it would be worth highlighting as one other thing that maybe wasn't kind of just off the map hot. And speaking of hot data, you know, hey, I just laid out the fact that the labor market is, for a single monthly print, that's about as good as you can get. And upcoming this next week on Wednesday, we'll have the inflation data, which is going to be, as Nick Timorios of the Wall Street Journal, you know, laid out today, much more important to the Fed than the labor market. Now, part of that is, you know, they still have some hope that at least inflation will cool since jobs won't, because they definitely put a lot of weight on jobs back in Q4 when they did the pivot. But naturally, they're gonna you know, focus on the one thing they think might cool off. The expectation is for 0.3% growth in inflation. I think it was 0.4 last month. So I would say if you get 0.3, the market will probably be pretty happy with that, even though that's not great. If you get 0.2, I think you'll reprice in probably like two whole cuts, something like that. So it would be a big day for markets. Yields would plummet on the short end, stuff like that. On the flip side, if you print a 0.4% and, you know, you have some stuff that's showing up hotter than people expected, it's going to do the opposite. It's going to probably pull out an entire cut, if not wipe cuts out for the rest of the year almost. I would say like a really shock surprise to the upside would take them all out. Just a 0.4% again, probably not. Probably would just take one cut out and get you down to kind of like 1.5 remaining being priced into the market. And our plan at the moment, like when we got to 6-7 cuts, we knew we wanted to fade that, and we did. It's been the right call as we've gone all the way back down under 3. Inflation has perked up. Yields have surged lately. So thankfully, it's something we got right. But the plan kind of along the way has been, look, if everyone agrees with this and the Fed has to kind of unpivot and go back to like, you know, no cuts, maybe one if they get lucky, then it would be kind of time to kind of flip back over and to buy some shorter term yields on a bet that, hey, something might happen to, you know, put some cuts back in. So if the Fed has to like really pivot, and they kind of started to today in a way, like, or this week, like I don't think Powell has it all, but I've outlined how Waller did a little bit last week. And then this week you had Kashkari come out very hawkish. Mester was fairly hawkish. Lori Logan was hawkish. Michelle Bowman was kind of hawkish. All of them are talking about the natural rate that I spent a bunch of time on yesterday being higher. So I write this piece saying the Fed doesn't get it. The natural rate is higher than they think. Next thing I know, they're all coming out saying, like, hey, maybe the natural rate's higher than we think. So to their credit, like, they are starting to make the adjustment. They're starting to realize, wait a second, rates are really high and the economy doesn't care. Now, what they need to realize is the significant role higher asset prices are playing in that, but maybe they'll realize one thing at a time and we should just be happy. But so next week, we'll want to keep a very close eye on that CPI report, of course, on Wednesday. And just like I did here, where I don't take the one data point and look at about a dozen different ones, kind of do a big cross section of all the data just to kind of get a really holistic view. We'll be doing the same for Wednesday's inflation report so that we can hopefully best align ourselves with not where we're at today, but where we're going to be in 3 to 6 months. But that is all I have for today. Thanks for listening to this very wonky and nerdy data driven Friday special edition of the Daily Dots. Back next week. Have a great weekend. Cheers.
The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.